Mace, Finn, Ginn, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you live on opening day, Derek.
Officially, and they got it right.
Of Nashville Sounds Baseball. We are overlooking the field. The grass is perfectly manicured. The infield looks great. They're raking it right now. A beautiful day for baseball. The Sounds open their 2025 season tonight against the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. You throw out the record books when the Sounds play the Jumbo Shrimp.
Hey, listen. The AAA affiliate didn't play one or two games and then call this, you know, the season opening or first day of baseball. No, they did it the right way, MLB. They played the game on the day that they have set aside each year, and they call that truly opening day. And this is what it looks like.
Gorgeous.
The beautiful skyline.
Beautiful day.
Man, this is – oh, my – Willie, we were just talking with the owner, right?
Yeah, Frank Ward came over to say hello.
And Adam was over there, and
– I was also there.
Yeah, Adam was there, but you came in a little bit late. But you came in, we started talking, because you were taking care of
business.
Exactly.
I was making sure that the show was going to
Absolutely. So you were taking care of the real business. And Willie and I was just over there fraternizing and talking and schmoozing. That's what we were doing. But when you came over, got into the conversation of 10 years ago, what the skyline looked like from this ballpark or from this area.
It was all cranes and construction.
It was cranes, yes. Yeah. And look at it now. Not a crane in sight.
And
all
it's just,
due to
it's,
the might.
And
Lake
it's very scenic. It's
very.
Lake is a five.
Oh, man. But go ahead.
So the Sounds take on Jacksonville tonight. Pre-game starts at 6:20 on 94.9 The Fan. First pitch is at 6:35 p.m. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. So yesterday, gentlemen, we touched on something briefly at the end of the program in our final segment. We touched on the Titans announcing that they were switching to their quote-unquote Titans blue, light blue uniforms for all home games this coming season. And as I got in the car and headed home, of course, I had the dial tuned in to 102.5 The Game and listened to Jared Stillman talk about this same thing. And what I love about our station is we all have different vibes.
Yeah.
Robbie
We're different
is,
ages,
right.
different viewpoints.
Robbie is different than Joe. Big Joe is different from Chase. We are all different in our own ways. And, of course, Jared is on an island on his own.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to Jared, who, as we know, to put it lightly, is quick to outrage. I was listening to Jared talk about the Titans' decision to change the uniforms. And I thought to myself for a minute, should I be more outraged by this? Did I downplay? Did I undersell the change in uniforms? And lo and behold, on The Athletic today was a long feature story written by Brooks Kubina with the headline, "How Oilers Throwback Uniforms Stoked the Embers of a Decades-Long NFL Relocation Fight." Now, I imagine that this article was written in conjunction with the decision. It's a really good article about the backstory between the Oilers and the city of Houston and the franchise now known as the Tennessee Titans. Mm-hmm. So even if you know all of this stuff, it's a great read. The article starts in part, quote, "On Thursday morning, the Titans announced Titans blue as their primary home jersey color starting in 2025. The move came nearly a year after the Houston Texans unveiled an alternate uniform combination that features a color the franchise coyly calls H-Town Blue. The blues are nearly indistinguishable, and the battle over which NFL team owns the hue rages on." As the story notes, there's a lot of contempt in that color, Derek Mason. "In each of the last two seasons, Titans owner Amy Adams Strunk raised eyebrows and stoked outrage by authorizing the wearing of throwback Oilers uniforms against the Texans. The team embraced by the city that rebuked her father. And in Thursday's news release, the Titans revealed that they will not wear their Oiler throwbacks in 2025. But in making Titans blue its primary color, the team is quite literally marking its territory. A really good read on The Athletic.
I agree. And I think this is because I never understood, truly. I never understood why the Houston Texans were in such – or in such – I'm not going to even say – is it the majority or a minority that is pushing, you know – this, we want that color. We want that color back. Y'all had a chance to have the color. Now, I don't know what all went into him not choosing to be there, and I'm sure it was very contentious. But at the end of the day, y'all had an opportunity, both sides, to keep the team in Houston and keep the colors there. But for whatever reason, Bud chose to move the team here. Y'all end up getting a team years later. But, and this is why part of me, I always make this statement when they mesh both of the franchises together, Houston and Tennessee. Because you run into stuff like this, why didn't you just retire everything Houston Oiler, color and all, so it couldn't be used? You retire everything. And let it be and start up the Titans. But because you didn't, you messed up.
No, they did. That's exactly what
they did. No, but what I'm saying is they still got the two. They're still meshed together. Like, guys from Houston come here.
Right.
But
that's part of the reason that Bud Adams did it. I was at the press conference when he announced he was changing the name. And this was a year before they actually settled on the name Titans. It was before the season even opened. Or the stadium even.
But this is Bud's thing. So why is the Houston Texans
right,
up in arms? Because this is Bud's.
Yes. Paul Tagliabue was at the press conference at Tennessee State. I guess this would have been before the 98 season. So when you guys played at Vanderbilt the last year before the stadium opened.
Yes.
He announced, we will have a new name. He didn't say what the name was going to be, and they had these goofy contests, guess the name, which and the fans, at the end of the day, had no say in it. Yeah. Like, I think Bud settled on Titans because it was the old AFL reference to the New York Titans. And there was a match with just coincidentally with the Parthenon, Athens of the South, all that stuff. So it worked. Okay. But at that press conference, Paul Tagliabue said he made this big fanfare. And it was really, from the Nashville perspective, nobody really cared about this pronouncement because everybody here wanted a new nickname. Nobody wanted to keep Oilers. Yep. Nobody. And this goes to your point. It's a much bigger deal in Houston than it is in Nashville. But Tagliabue said, the name Oilers, the entire franchise, will be retired.
Yeah,
and we're
right.
Like, what does that mean? Okay, whatever, big deal. Like, but it was a big deal to Bud Adams. He wanted to protect that logo, the oil derrick, and all of that stuff for him. And I think that ticked off some people in Houston.
I'm sure.
Here, to me, I've never thought it's been a big deal. So when they talk about wearing the throwback uniforms, I just don't think it resonates with the fans here in Nashville.
The article written by Brooks Kubina of The Athletic continues, Tennessee's uniform switch is also a strategic maneuver.
Yes.
Strunk has blocked moves by the Texans, who, urged by fan council members still mourning the loss of the Oilers, pursued expanding their usage of a color they argue belongs to Houston.
See, it's already been settled. That was settled in 1998.
The Texans settled for using H-Town blue as an accent color in their alternate uniforms, given the rigidity of the NFL's uniform policy. The Titans could all but monopolize the use of the blue in their primary uniforms for several seasons. Here is something else that I found to be interesting. Of all the league's relocations, Houston's is the only one in which the departing team shed its name and shelved it, preventing the franchise that backfilled the market from using it.
Yeah, you're right. You look at all the teams that have
left. Like the Cleveland Browns.
Yes.
The Cleveland Browns left to become the Baltimore Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have the Cleveland Browns again.
Right.
That did not happen in this situation.
Yeah, and again, I don't understand why. Because I had a big thing here in Nashville. But they did, I think they strategically did the right thing. Instead of making it, and this is what we talked about, yesterday. Wearing the alternate jerseys. I like the alternate jerseys once a year. You were like, not really.
And well, I don't know understand. About once a year, but pull them out every now and then, that's not a big deal for historic purposes.
Yeah, but
and the fans think it's cool looking. There's no connection from Nashville to Houston or to that team.
Yes, and I get it, and I understand that part, but I just like seeing it because I grew up watching that color combination with that old Derek on the helmet. That's what I watched growing up.
The number one topic when you guys were wearing those uniforms in Memphis and at Vanderbilt was, when are they going to change the name?
Exactly.
Because they didn't like anything to
Tennessee
do with
it. Oral,
wasn't,
yeah.
wasn't
because
a
there were no Oral Derricks in Tennessee.
Right, they just wanted something different. They didn't want to be called the Oilers.
But for them
you were
to,
an Oil Derrick.
Yeah, I was an Oil Derrick. Absolutely, you're right. And I
Derek
still have my helmet. And I still have my helmet, and I'm going to keep them. But by them, saying, you know what, we're not going to do the throwbacks. But what we are going to do is now that's going to be a part of our permanent color. So now that blocks Houston from doing anything. Now they got to come up with this H-Town blue that looks similar to the, you know.
The Love You Blue.
The Love You Blue. Yeah. But this is not the only fight. You remember, was it 6 months ago, that the University of Houston wanted to use the same exact colors.
They had a Oilers-style getup.
Exactly.
That led to the NFL sending a cease and desist letter.
And I think they kept using it, didn't they? The AD was like, no, we're gonna.
That is mentioned in this article I'm looking for.
So
right
I wonder,
now.
Did they actually stay with the color combination?
The University of Houston and Rice University allied with their hometown team by debuting Oilers-themed alternate uniforms in 2023, which earned UH a cease and desist letter from the NFL. In defiant solidarity, the university published a lengthy homage that laid claim to Houston blue, a color it says is synonymous with the city, complete with new uniform sets.
See, I'm not her from Houston, so I don't know if that's like
Adams. It's an Adams family versus Houston. The people in Nashville, this goes back to our discussion yesterday about one of the reasons why there is, I think, a lack of trust, a lack of connection in a lot of ways between the fan base and the team, despite the team being here for as long as it's been, is there has always been, from the top, a detachment between the Adams family and the city of Nashville. They have not embraced Nashville. They have not lived here. They haven't connected here. Their roots, still to this day, are in Houston.
Yeah.
Their perspective is Houston. And so I think that's been a disconnect for a long, long time. And look, we got the team. We've had great memories. We're going to get a new stadium, and it is what it is. But it is not the deep connection to the community that I think is ideal.
As it also notes in the article, Amy Adams Strunk inherited her father's stubbornness. According to league sources, there was once a perception within the Texans organization that there were discussions for Houston to possibly regain the Oilers' history and intellectual property, but any pipe dream of the Titans ever relinquishing the Oilers' intellectual property and history to the Texans would likely elicit an expletive if expressed inside the Titans facility.
Again, big deal to the Adams, I guess.
Yes.
I can just tell you my opinion. Me sitting here in Nashville, I don't care. I don't want to see the Oilers' uniforms. I like the Titans' uniforms. It's the Tennessee Titans. It's been over a generation now. Get over the stuff. If Houston wants to make a big deal out of it, fine. And if you want to do that privately, but don't come to me thinking, hey, let's rally the Titans fans against Houston because of the Love You Blue. No, I don't care.
I don't think Titans fans care too much about that. Now, again, because I played in those colors and I played in that
helmet. It's a cool uniform. I like that.
I have an attachment to. I like seeing the Love You Blue. I like seeing it. So I'm glad they did incorporate it into the permanent, jerseys.
Yes.
I'm glad they did.
I'm wearing a Mets hat. The Mets' original colors are orange and blue. They still have those colors. Mm-hmm. Why is it orange and blue? Because the Dodgers and the Giants left. Mm-hmm. So they have Dodger blue and they have Giants orange. That's why they – so it's the same thing,
it's
right?
The same
you keep
thing, yeah.
You keep a connection by the fans who lost their teams back
exactly.
in the 1950s.
Absolutely.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Your thoughts on the Titans' decision to make Titan Blue their primary home color uniform this season, and the history between Houston and the Adams family and the city of Nashville. 615-737-1025. Again, we are out at First Horizon Park. Sounds opening day against the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. First pitch is at 6:35. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063. The game.
Remember this one, D-Mace? Echoing throughout Vanderbilt Stadium.
How often did they play this song during the game?
Enough that we know it.
Enough. It was a lot before the game. And we were like, are you serious? The Tennessee Oilers.
Oh, my God.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, of course.
Of course, as soon as you play this song, you get five phone calls. See? You got to change the name. We had so many calls. I can't even tell you how rich I would be if we got a dollar for every call about wanting to change the name. It can't be Oilers. We've got no connection to oil. We have no connection to Houston. You've got to change the name. They beat us down.
So we have plenty of reaction to the Titans' decision to switch to Titan Blue, not to be confused with H-Town Blue.
I also don't understand why this is a big story. They've worn this quite a bit. It's not like they haven't worn these jerseys, right?
What are you talking about?
The
blue?
Yeah.
With the new blue?
They wear that a decent amount of times over the last few years, right?
One texter on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com points out that the Titans are 0-2 against the Texans in the Oilers uniforms.
Right. The last 2 years they've lost to them.
Yes. So one texter says, I'm from Houston and moved to Nashville the same year the Oilers did. I love the Love You Blue colors. Grew up with it and still support it here in Nashville. Skyler on our text line says, I'm 27 years old. Man, do I wish I was still 27. Titans fans my age do not care about the Oilers or uniforms. We want to watch the Titans suck wearing the Titans blue. LOL.
Okay, what I want to understand is this, because obviously I haven't seen a new jersey. Have the new jerseys come out with the new Love You Blue or Titan Blue on it? If so,
are they wearing new uniforms next year?
Is this because they're wearing,
or is it just using the combinations and saying we're going to use?
But my thing is, they've had this combination. They've had the blue in they had the blue in every jersey. Period.
Yeah.
Every jersey that the Titans have had, I need to make sure.
The first few years, you guys didn't have that as a jersey color. It was always highlighted in the jerseys, right? The navy.
Because even in 99 is when we started wearing the new jerseys.
Right.
It had the blue on the top for the shoulder pads.
Right.
That continued.
It was the accent. It was the third color.
That continued all the way up until 03, where they changed it a little bit, where the dark blue became the shoulder pads and the light blue became the chest.
Right. And that was more of an alternate.
Yeah. So they've always had this color, but I guess it wasn't the primary. They're doing it for the purposes of Houston not being able to use it. So now what we're going to do is say, this is Titan Blue, wink, wink. It's really Love You Blue, but we're going to call it Titan Blue.
As Gino says on our text line, I love the pettiness over the color. one thing I love just as much as maximum chaos, it's maximum pettiness.
Well, I think that's it with the Adams family.
Yes. I think it's pettiness on Houston's side.
Right, and that gives that.
Exactly.
They like that. The Adams family enjoys that they can get a rise out of Houston. I think that's
But it's not like
fine.
The Adams. I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is not something that the Adams family started. Like, they didn't say, well, at least not publicly, I don't think they said, you know what, we're going to wear these blues to piss off Houston.
I think there was a bitterness from the mid-90s. Uh-huh. And we need our historian, John McClain. I'm sure he has endless stories, and I've heard a lot of them, which is why that's really where I'm basing what I'm saying. But in the Astrodome in the 90s, they were second fiddle to the Astros, right? They were not the main tenant. Uh-huh. And they always had to sort of play off of, you know, when can we get the building, you know, where can we have the seats and all those things. And the Astros had first dibs. So they always wanted a new stadium. And so his first preference was for them to Houston to build him a new stadium there. And when that didn't happen, he got sideways with the city people. And then there was this game that they canceled in the Astrodome because the turf wasn't
good. Yeah, the turf
good,
was bad.
Right? So they canceled the game. And that just that ticked everybody off. And that kept moving the snowball down the road. And it was picking up speed, picking up size. And then all of a sudden he's talking to Nashville. And Mayor Bredesen was like, we'll build you a stadium. Hey, let's work on that. And it just kept going. And for a while, we're like, are they really going to – is this real? Are we going to get the NFL? Are they really going to move from Houston? Surely Houston's just going to say, we'll build you a new stadium and be done with it. But it got so sideways between the Adams family and the city of Houston that that worked to Nashville's advantage. And Bud Adams was like, all right, I'm out of here.
But do you think they – my thing is when it comes to the colors, I think they're, you know, when the whole move happened, I think the assumption had to be, you know, we're moving, we're taking everything, we're not leaving anything for Houston.
Yeah.
Whoever team they end up being, we're not leaving anything for you. Colors, nothing. We're taking it all. History, we're taking it all. So there had to be this assumption that, okay, it's theirs, we're going to start our own thing. But they, it's like, they just, they want, I don't know, they want that color. Why? I don't.
I'm sure they want to be able to enjoy their fans, their older fans, the Errol Campbell,
exactly,
the Warren Moon, some of the great history, that it's harder for them down in Houston.
But you can still wear it. And I'm pretty sure it would be accepted if you walk into a Houston Texans game with an Oilers jersey on. Nobody's going to say anything to you.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's more so of – I don't even think it's everybody in the city of Houston.
It's out of spite, too, because – It's true on the other side. Like it's more difficult
for the
Texans. Yeah, it's more difficult for the Texans to celebrate Warren Moon or Earl Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be a lot easier to bring them to the stadium and have them wave.
So are the
they would love that.
But do they want to celebrate them?
But when you bring Earl Campbell or Warren Moon here, there's not the same connection. There's no connection for those fans.
So
are the Titans a spite franchise, like the spite store on Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I think there's a little thread of that. There's a thread of that.
So,
yeah.
Latte.
It's just not built next door. So, it's built, you know, a few hours.
So in this case, the Titans are Latte Larry's.
Yes.
And the Texans are Mocha Joe's. It's just a spite franchise. The franchise was born out of spite. That's what
this is. This is McDonald's and McDowell's.
Yeah.
We got the big arch. They got the big arches.
Right. But that's where the Adams said, no, you can't have
exactly
the same colors. And you can't
absolutely
have the arches, right? We're taking those, and you got to have your own colors is how that went.
But I think it's just the owner and some politicians that are probably pushing this harder than what it needs to. The fans are probably like, we understand now we got our own team. So we got some great players within our own, or you know, within our own franchise. Let's celebrate those guys.
Mike on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I'm 42, and just like the 27-year-old, I also want to see the Titans suck in the Titans blue. We aren't the Oilers. That's our past. Keep it there, please.
I don't disagree with what he's saying, because I've always have been on record saying, I think the two franchises need to be separate. Why? Because when these guys come here, nobody knows them. Now, back in 99, 98, if you do that, yeah, there's still in a sort of an attachment to it. Because some of those guys end
Bruce
up coming
Matthews,
here.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of those guys end up playing with the Titans. Bruce Matthews, Darrell Lewis, Chris Sanders, Eddie George, Steve McNair, guys like that. They were on that team. But now, let them have, not the Houston Texans, but I'm saying let that franchise be its own. Like, don't mesh the two. Don't merge the two, because it gets confusing when you bring them out in the fan. You're asking them to cheer for great guys, Hall of Fame guys. And outside of maybe Warren Moon, and if Earl Campbell comes back, everybody's like, well, who is that again?
Well, I do find this interesting. And, Willie, I think you can relate to this as well. When a team relocates and takes on the history from before the relocation, right? So the Arizona Coyotes, which no longer exist. They are now the Utah Hockey Club. Yes. When the Coyotes...
The Utahns.
The Coyotes relocated from Winnipeg, because remember, there were the original Winnipeg Jets, right? And the Winnipeg Jets moved from Winnipeg to Arizona. And going to the arena in Glendale at the time, you would see like Teemu Selanne would have a ring of honor. It'd be like Teemu Selanne. Teemu Selanne never played for the Arizona Coyotes.
Right.
He played for the original Winnipeg Jets. Like Dale Hawerchuk. Like, I always found it so weird.
Because
so
they still, quote, held the franchise records.
Right.
So somewhat, you know?
But I also just found it, like, I kind of, like, tell me if I'm wrong, but, like, I understand that the Titans want to honor the legacy of the Oilers, but I do find it to be a bit strange. Am I wrong in thinking that?
Well, if you look at the team records, still officially, like Eddie George's numbers are, I believe, right in the media guide, still alongside
Earl Campbell's
and
the rest of them.
Lorenzo Neal and all those guys that played for the Houston Oilers. So yeah, it's a little awkward no matter what you do. But this is another thing that's interesting from Houston. Look, I have no connection to Houston. But at the time, remember, we're all watching this unfold in Nashville. So when this deal is being struck, the last year, people remember Memphis, they remember Vanderbilt. But in 96, the last year of the Houston Oilers, everybody in Houston knew they were leaving. And this was before you were playing, right?
Yeah.
D-Mace, you weren't on that team.
But
Eddie
one?
George can tell you.
Oh, yeah.
I spent some time in Houston.
In Houston.
But the last year in the Astrodome, the fans knew they were gone, so nobody went to the games. They were like, good riddance, get out of here. We watched an entire year of Oilers football going, this is going to be a team in Tennessee next year. It was still strange to wrap your head around, but nobody went to their games. And so Houston was like, get out of here. But now they want all that back. But at the time, they couldn't get Bud Adams out of there quick enough. And as soon as he left, they started the process of trying to get a new stadium.
Yeah.
And get a new owner and get a team back. And it worked because it wasn't very long before the Texans were born.
615.
But now you want all that back. You want your cake and eat it too. That's not – that deal's been already done. That's water under the bridge.
615-737-1025. We will continue to take your reaction to that. Also, Elliot Friedman, who normally joins us on Thursdays, will join us at noon today. But coming up next, we're expected to be joined – by a Nashville Sounds guest. 615-737-1025. Continue to let us know about the
Is it a mystery?
It is a mystery.
he's right here.
It's a mystery. We're gonna make it a mystery.
We're making it a mystery.
We're making it a mystery
for
the caller, for the listeners and the callers. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingit, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. All right, I've built the suspense. We are joined by Jeff Hamm, voice of the Nashville Sounds, joining us here on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Jeff, I want you to settle something for us that we were talking about yesterday. So yesterday in Major League Baseball, that was opening day, right?
Yes.
Not the games that happened overseas, like Derek thinks.
I mean, I get what Derek is saying.
There's a butt coming.
I don't care about the butt.
We just pulled off the Band-Aid again.
I guess there's two ways to look at it. Uh-huh. If you're thinking of a particular team, for example, the Cubs played the Dodgers. The Cubs played the Diamondbacks last night. That was not Cubs opening day, but that was Diamondbacks opening day. So to me, it kind of depends on the team. The team's first game is their opening day. Now, Major League Baseball opening day, I guess yesterday. Can we just say like domestic opening day?
Majority of the league's opening day was yesterday.
Correct.
So that feels like opening day to me.
Correct.
That's all I'm saying.
I can confirm tonight is Sounds opening day.
Thank you.
And I will go out on a large limb for that.
There is no question about that. The Sounds kick off their 2025 season tonight against the deliciously named Jacksonville jumbo shrimp. So, Jeff, give us an outlook on this season for the Nashville Sounds. What can people expect?
Yeah, first of all, the opening day roster has a lot of guys who spent at least some time with the Sounds last year. Several very highly regarded prospects, not just for the Brewers organization, our parent club, but in the game itself. On the pitching front with guys like Craig Yoho and Logan Henderson and Jacob Mizorowski, all three of those guys came up from AA late last year. All three of those guys, it would not surprise anybody if they pitched for the Brewers this year and maybe even soon, the way they have their talent level. And then some other returning players too, but at AAA you usually have that mix too because teams, especially like the Brewers, who are so good at going out and finding talent, signed some six-year minor league free agents, guys with some big league time, guys with a little bit of big league time, some guys with no big league time to fill in the rest of that depth from outside the organization. And we've seen a lot of those guys in recent years have an impact here and get to the big leagues. Every organization seems like they're a little bit different in how they approach building their AAA roster or how good they are at building a AAA roster. And the Brewers have proven through the Sounds the last few years that they're as good as anybody at finding players who they didn't draft or they didn't originally sign, but go out, bring them in, and then they become huge contributors. Tobias Myers was a very important Sound last year who was from outside the organization the previous year, ends up, you know, starting a postseason game for the Brewers last year. He's unfortunately hurt right now on their opening day roster, but he was a very meaningful Brewer for a team that won that division again last year. So even if some fans around here don't know some of these guys as household names, they can trust the quality that the parent club Brewers accomplish in building a AAA roster. So I want to say it's 7 years in a row now, it may even be eight, that Brewers AAA, and for the last several years that's been the Sounds, have finished with a winning record. So by and large, you're going to see a pretty good product on the field with what the Sounds have, and the opening day roster seems like that'll be right in line with what we've seen in previous years.
I knew this was going to start off great because he sort of kind of agreed with me in a way with opening day. So I knew this was going to be a great, along with the backdrop. Now, Jeff, I would imagine the sort of difficult part about your job is the fluctuation of the roster, whether you're bringing guys up or guys are then going to the major leagues, or they may be dealing with an injury from the major leagues that they get sent down so they can sort of do – that's part of their rehab. How much time do you need to spend on the top and the bottom in regards to guys potentially coming here?
Sure. It's always interesting as the broadcaster because – yes, you want to prepare for a little bit of the guys that aren't here right now but could be. But then there also could be a couple guys just added from, like I said, from outside the organization. Like next week, the Brewers could put in a waiver claim on somebody and add that player to the Sounds. And they were with the Blue Jays last week, or, you know, they spent the first 2 weeks of the year in the Yankees organization or something. And so you can only prepare in advance so far because the roster is going to change a ton. And so you read up on the current group as much as you can. And then when you hear a new name is coming or a new name gets added, thankfully there's so much volume of information these days on these guys, whether it's a private stat portal that MLB has where you can quickly get a sense of some analytics and their history, or media guides from the previous organization. So thankfully it's not that hard to fairly quickly get a snapshot on a brand new player. But even like next week, the Sounds will play in Gwinnett, AAA for the Braves. Even if I were told today who the scheduled starting pitchers are for Gwinnett in that series, I wouldn't start reading too deeply just yet because by the time those games roll around, somebody got called up, somebody got traded, and so you're always trying to work ahead a little bit. But if you go too far, you're doing work that might not matter when you actually see that team down the line. That's just life at AAA.
We're talking to Jeff Hem, voice of the Sounds. They open up tonight. Beautiful weather. Great night to come out to the park. And so, Jeff, we were talking about it's hard to even fathom how quickly the 10 years have gone by here. This might be the best opening day weather you've had. But if you can, just paint the picture of just the setting. It's changed. I can remember in the early years so much construction was going on.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it's ever going to be completely done. It's always evolving. But it looks like now you've got that setting that – anybody that comes in, that's going to be a big part of the essence when you get in here.
I totally agree. The kind of the backdrop that you guys have sitting up here today and that I get from my booth is it feels like a very finished product. Whereas you're right, when this place opened in 2015, left field kind of went on forever, almost directly to downtown, and there was very little in between. All these buildings that we're looking at right now from where we're sitting are all brand new within the last 10 years, even kind of behind us and off to our left, over near the third base side of the entrance. The parking garage was getting finished as 2015's season was opening up. So it's really, I love this ballpark so much because I feel like it accomplishes two things at the very same time. One, it does feel like a downtown ballpark, and we call it a downtown ballpark because it's a very short walk to, you know, the heart of downtown where you're calling games at Bridgestone. But it also feels like a neighborhood ballpark because we're separate enough from downtown, and Germantown is its own ecosystem that has built up incredibly in the last 10 years, which was then Mayor Dean's vision at the time that this ballpark was built. He wanted it to be here, and he felt like more would come around it. And, man, has that ever come true. So, you know, you walk, you don't have to leave the area right around the ballpark to find good food, to find a place to live, to find areas to walk. You've got the greenway. So it's its own neighborhood feel over here, too, which I think is really special. And as more people keep moving here and literally just walk out their door, go across the street and catch a ball game, that's great. That's great from a ticket-selling standpoint, but it's also just great for – building up the environment and the atmosphere around the ballpark. So I love that it's downtown and it's a neighborhood ballpark at the same time.
It's more scenic every year. And all those living establishments, I guess they're condos, different things, in left center. I'm curious, has that affected the flight of the ball at all? Does it help the home run hitter or help the pitcher? Which one is it?
It's hard to come up to a grand consensus on that, but I can guarantee you that folks like Rick Sweet, as that has gone up, have been very interested to see how it does play on the field. I don't know if you remember 2015, this ballpark was not built to intentionally be a pitcher's ballpark, but 2015, and what baseball is being used plays a role in this, but yes. In 2015, there were like, it took forever for home runs to start flying in this ballpark, and players are crushing these balls and they're barely landing on the warning track. And it was like nobody meant for this to be a pitcher's haven. As time's gone on, it has become not hitter-friendly, but it's leveled out to be a little fair. It still leans pitcher-friendly. But most of the time, the wind blows from the right field corner to the left field corner, which would mean the buildings in left field wouldn't have too dramatic of an impact if that's the way the breeze is blowing. But you would think it does block some of that wind and maybe just make it swirl a little bit more, not dramatically, but enough for a ball player to notice when they hit one to left field. Because we go some places on the road that are very much like that. Gwinnett, where we go next week, apartment buildings are like right there in left field. And people say when that place opened, the ball would fly, and now it stops because it's all blocked by that breeze. So it's interesting how the dynamics of the on-field play, whether intentional or not, have evolved a little bit as more has come around the ballpark.
Last thing for you, it's interesting how AAA has been sort of the training ground of a lot of rule changes that we're seeing, because I think most people, even if they were hesitant at the start, like what Major League Baseball has done to pick up the pace of the game, do some of the things. It's a great product right now, and a lot of that stuff you saw a year or two in advance.
Yeah,
the extra runner for extra inning games. The
pitch clock.
I want to ask you, the pitch clock is a big one for sure. But what about the challenge system of a ball and a strike? Because that's getting a lot of talk now. A lot of people think that will eventually get to Major League Baseball.
I think it will get to Major League Baseball full time. I love it. Again, like, people love to jump on Major League Baseball for this or that in negative ways, and I get that on certain topics. But like a lot of what they've implemented, I think, has been great, and the challenge system is right in line with that. MLB experimenting with it this year at spring training, but we've seen it for a couple of years and we'll again have it this year. Every game, they get two challenges now. It used to be three. Second half of last year, they went to two, and it'll be two this year. It's quick. There's a little bit of drama to it, you know, and I love how the key is that they put it up on the video board. Everybody in the ballpark is on the same page with how close was it to a ball or a strike. It takes about 10, 12 seconds tops. And there's some strategy to it, too. Rick Sweet would tell you, he tells his guys, do not challenge anything in the first three innings of the game. That was with three challenges. Don't challenge anything within the first three innings of the game unless, you know, it's bases loaded and unless you're sure, because you don't want to burn that challenge, in part because he feels like the umpires might call things a little bit differently if they know that you are out of challenges as you're batting or pitching or whatever. So there's a strategy to it. First inning, you as the batter, you might want to challenge something. You got to, all right, let it go. You know, we might want that one in the eighth inning when we're down a run and the bases are loaded. So strategy, it's quick. It's public. Everybody's on the same page. It doesn't take very long. And at the end of the day, the umpires are really good at what they do. But like any of us, they're human. So there's recourse for the team if they feel like the umpire made a mistake. And a lot of times, the umpire was right. Guys will challenge it and get it wrong. I want to say it was about 50-50 last year whether the player in challenging was right. So this is not showing that the umpires are making all these mistakes. A lot of times it's showing how good they are.
So it's like the tennis match, right? Yes, when they put it up there, you look up and everybody starts clapping.
And what's amazing is, like, if the ball just ticks any part of the strike zone, it's a strike. And, you know, if there's times where, like, you couldn't put a piece of paper in between the ball and the edge of the strike zone. But if it touches, it's a strike. But I
go wild on the call? He struck him out!
It can get dramatic. I mean, I'm literally on there saying, all right, let's see. Here we go. The Sounds are – this is their last challenge. If you win the challenge, you keep it. So it's like the NFL in that regard. But – there's drama, and again, at the end of the day, I think it's a win for everybody because it gives the players recourse if they're frustrated. There's strategy to it. It's quick, but it also shows that the umpires are really good at what they do 99% of the time.
Jeff Hem, voice of the Nashville Sounds, joining us on D-Mace, Vingan and Donick. Jeff, thank you so much for your time. Happy opening day.
Happy opening day. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. And you can tune into
D-Mace,
Jeff.
Don't say it.
Don't say it.
Happy Sounds opening day.
There we go.
Okay. Got to clarify.
And you can listen to Jeff Hem's call of the Nashville Sounds tonight on 94.9 The Fan. Pre-game begins at 6:20. First pitch is at 6:35. 615-737-1025. Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet's NHL insider, will join us coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063. The game.